Part 1. The First Trip North. West Hampton, July 9. In 1969, I won a George Polk Prize for some lifestyle articles about Black Mayor Jimmy Lee Horn of Nashville. The series was called A Walker's Guide to Shantytown, but it ran in the Citizen Reporter as Black Lives. It wasn't a bad writing job, but it was more a case of being in the right place at the right time. I'd written life-affirming stories about a black man in Tennessee just a year after Martin Luther King had died there. It felt right to people who judge things somewhere. They said the series was vital. So I was lucky in 69. I figured things were beginning to even out the day I drove into the William Pound Institute in West Hampton, Long Island. On account of my assignment there, I wouldn't be writing any of the article about Horn's murder. The good Horn assignments had already gone elsewhere, higher up. I parked my rented car in a crowded yard marked All Hospital Visitors All. Then, armed with tape recorder, suit coat over my arm, too, I made my way along a broken flagstone path tunneling through bent old oak trees. I didn't really notice a lot about the hospital at first. I was busy feeling sorry for myself. Random observation. The man looking most obviously lost and disturbed at the William Pound Institute, baggy white suit, torn Panama hat, monkey ward dress shirt, must have been me. Here was Oakes Jones, 31-year-old corn-pone savant, never before having been north of Washington, D.C. But the Brooks Brothers doctors, the nurses, the fire-haired patients walking around the hospital paid no attention, which isn't easy, even at 9:30 on a drizzly, unfriendly morning. Generally, I'm noticed most places. My blonde hair is close-cropped, just a little seedy on the sides, already falling out on top, so that my head resembles a Franciscan monk's. I'm slightly cross-eyed without my glasses, and because of the rain I had them off. Moreover, I'm 6'7", and I stand out quite nicely without the aid of quirky clothes. No one noticed, though. One doctory-looking woman said, "Hello, Michael." "Oakes," I told her. That was about it for introductions. Less than 1% believing Ben Toy might have a story for me, I dutifully followed all the blue arid signs marked Bowditch. The grounds of the Pound Institute were clean and fresh-smelling and green as a state park. The hospital reminded me of an Eastern University campus, some place with a name like Ithaca, or Swarthmore, or Hobart. It was nearly 10 as I walked past huge red brick houses along an equally red cobblestone road. Occasionally a Cadillac or Mercedes crept by at the posted 10-mile-per-hour speed limit. The Federalist-style houses I passed were the different wards of the hospital. One was for the elderly bedridden. Another was for the elderly who could still putter around, predominantly lobotomies. One four-story building housed nothing but children aged over 10 years. A little girl sat rocking in the window of one of the downstairs rooms. She reminded me of Anthony Perkins at the end of Psycho. I jotted down a few observations and felt silly making them. I kept one wandering eye peeled for Ben Toy's ward, Bowditch, male maximum security. A curious thing happened to me in front of the ward for young girls. A round-shouldered girl was sitting on the wet front lawn close to the road where I was walking. She was playing a blonde wood guitar and singing. She was just about talking the pop song Ballad of the Thin Man. Had those lyrics about Mr. Jones. I was Oakes Jones, 31, father of 2 daughters. The only violent act I could recall in my life was hearing, as a boy, that my great-uncle Oakes Jones had been hanged in Moon, Kentucky as a horse thief. And no, I didn't know what was going on. As a matter of fact, I knew considerably less than I thought I did.